Welcome to the Klamath Tribes podcast. Today we are talking about restoration. In fact, a very big project, one of the biggest going on in the Upper Klamath Basin. It's the Sprague River Collaborative Restoration Project, now in phase one. Joining me is Larry Nicholson. Please, your title once again.
Yes, Larry Nicholson, Executive Director of the Upper Klamath Basin Ag Collaborative.
That's a lot.
It is.
One introduction. So, with that said, what exactly are you doing?
Well, a group of landowners got together, and we're trying to figure out, you know, with all of the money available in the Klamath Basin for restoration and all the problems we have in the Upper Basin, and not much has been done up here, we thought that there was a way to merge ag resiliency and restoration.
And let's be clear, you're saying ag and agriculture.
Agriculture.
Yes.
Yes, so just ag. And there's agriculture is predominant in the Upper Basin. There's a lot of it here. It's a big economic driver. So, you know, it's not our interest to see agriculture go away. So we worked on creating a coalition of people, a lot of the NGOs and stakeholders, the federal agencies, state agencies and whatnot got together and come up with a proposal, went out for a U.S. Fish and Wildlife bill grant, bilateral infrastructure law money that was available, and ended up getting $6 million to put this project together.
Mind you, that's the first of funding that's necessary for a project that you and I have talked about already on a site view of the area that you said we'll be working on with the Sprague River. That could be upwards of hundreds of millions of dollars?
Well, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, it's probably $100 million just for the Sprague, not counting the rest of it. I mean, we've got the Klamath Marsh. You've got, you know, the Williamson Wood area. You've got the, very importantly, the Upper Klamath Lake issues that go on there. So, you know, we just want to try to figure out a way to merge agricultural interests in restoration because, you know, there's been a lot of ill feelings between the Klamath tribes and agriculture, and we're trying to, you know, look at the 95% of the things that we agree on and figure a pathway forward.
Yeah, and this is a Klamath tribe podcast, and you are a tribal member.
Yes.
Very small percentage of you, but nonetheless, your heritage does go back to a tribal member.
Absolutely.
Would you like to share that history?
Yeah, I mean, my mom was a Gentry, so I'm related to Don Gentry.
Who was in the Natural Resources Department here.
And my grandma, my grandmother and grandpa were Marie and Ray Hobbs, who have passed away, and they're in the tribal cemetery now. So pretty close connection.
And you have a ranch that goes back to 1898, one of the original settlers, you might say, of the area.
Yes. No, our family came back from Iowa back a little before then and ended up going to Medford and then got a place here in Fort Klamath and been here ever since.
And when did this ecosystem awareness and restoration aspirations of yourself come into the fold?
Well, I'm a Wood River irrigator, so I get my water from Annie Creek area, and of course we were called 6 years ago, along with everybody else, with surface water rights. So, you know, we're just, I fought it for a while, participated in litigation and whatnot, and decided that, you know, a better pathway forward is to figure out how we can agree. And I dropped my lawsuit and come and, you know, I'd rather try to figure out how we could work together to solve the problems that we have today, because it's in all of our best interests to figure out how to make the Upper Basin a better place to live. And I'm confident we can do that.
So you had an environmental awareness awakening. Are you a minority in the group of agricultural farmers and cattle ranchers in the basin?
I don't think so. No, I've not talked to landowners who are against restoration. They just want to survive. They want to get something for it. So, you know, I'm just trying to figure out where that line is and walk that line and work on finding funding to help, the agricultural resiliency piece along with all the allottees out there that are in ag. We got a lot of allottees who are in agriculture too. So, when you're in the ag world, it's kind of you fall in love with it, and it's something that you want to pass down through the generations, and I want to keep that alive in the Upper Basin.
You are into agriculture, yet you are maintaining a cattle ranch, but you don't actually own the cattle. Some people might not understand the logistics of this. So you're an agricultural farmer because you specialize in the hay that the cattle feed on, and the cattle owners lease the property from you, and you maintain the cattle until they're taken back, say, to California, like your current herd.
Yeah, that was we maintain the health of the cattle. We maintain the feed and whatnot, and we just watch over them.
I said hay, by the way, which is wrong, right?
It's grass.
Yeah. Grass-fed beef.
But, it's interesting, you look at, the difference between ranchers and farmers, for instance. And in a lot of ways, we're all farmers in the ag world because, what do we do we all sell a product. Some people harvest the product directly from the ground, like alfalfa, or you do potatoes or a lot of the things they do in the basin. But, we grow grass.
Not any grass, though. As you were telling me, it's like the best grass for cattle in North America.
Yeah, the Wood River Valley's got some really nutritious grass, and the whole Upper Basin. It's a cold environment. So in the wintertime, it goes dormant, and I don't know what it is about it up here, but when the grass comes back in the spring, it comes back with a vengeance, and there's usually a lot of moisture in the ground and whatnot. So you get a good return, and the clover keeps coming back. So what's happened with not being able to irrigate, at least in the Wood River Valley, is, it dies quicker. It goes dormant quicker. And so, it's really shortened our season. And the problem's a little different in the Sprague because it's drier. I remember that year, maybe 3 years ago, when we didn't have very good precipitation that year at all. And a lot of the grass fields in the Sprague area didn't even turn green, never even took off at all. And so that's a problem. I mean, we've got a hydration problem in the Sprague. And really what this project's about is that we want to figure out a way to rehydrate the Sprague Basin. And when we do that, what we do is we want to, slow the river down. The river was channelized and diked. And we want to meander the river more. We want to spread it out a little bit. We want to get that water in the ground so you have more water that's actually trapped in the ground itself. And then through the summer, that water gets released and will create higher flows in the summer as well. And that's cold, clean water. So it helps with the water quality aspect. Having riparian areas where we can filter out any of the nutrients going to the river from, cattle operations or whatnot. There's ways to do this. And so, I'm excited about exploring those opportunities and figuring out what's the best pathway forward to benefit everyone.
What's the length of the river that you're looking to focus your work on?
Well, the Sprague River is, 82 miles or so. And, we're looking at the whole river. We want to, part of this grant that we got is to look at doing a design. This grant doesn't restore. This grant, we're going to look at just what does that design look like to accomplish our goals, to both, to help ag resiliency and to improve restoration in the river itself, the water quality. There's not a lot of shade in a lot of areas, so you got warm water. We want to cool the river down, make the spawning grounds healthy again. So, the schwalm and koptu and maybe the salmon in the future. So, we just want to create that environment to give all the fisheries the best chance they can.
Looking back in the history of the Sprague, the Army Corps of Engineers came in the, what, 30s?
Probably the 40s and 50s.
40s and 50s, and they did what? And now we're trying to repair the damage.
Well, they straightened the river and they diked the river. So what happened is, you know, the river used to sprawl out a lot more, and you had a lot more hydration throughout the valley itself. Well, now it's all just channelized, and it just runs pretty quick, and it does a lot of it doesn't get absorbed into the ground at all. It just shoots right into the upper Klamath Lake, and it's warm, and a lot of it's in high phosphorus content. So, you know, we want to figure out ways to clean it up, cool it down, and store more of that water in the ground itself as it goes, so that gets released during the summer.
You said you can't fault too much what happened in the past because they just didn't know how they were dealing with the natural environment and impairing it. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think that's something that you see throughout the U.S. and throughout the world today. I mean, with all the environmental issues that we have and the warming that's going on and whatnot, it's just, you know, putting in dams. They didn't really realize the consequences of putting in all these dams. And so, you know, it just had a tremendous impact on the fisheries. And they didn't realize that straightening out rivers and taking out even, you know, a lot of the landowners and even tribal members way back then would take the willows out, not understanding that, you know, that was the shade that, you know, for the river itself to cool it down. I mean, we just didn't understand all that like we do today. So, you know, I think we have a lot better understanding of the damage that has been done. And right now, with all the money that's available in the Upper Basin, we have an opportunity to fix that. And, you know, I think it's so critical that we get this done sooner than later because this opportunity will not be here that long.
This opportunity being the financial opportunity.
Exactly. And it's going to take money.
Where is that money coming from?
You and me. It was appropriated by the Biden administration during the COVID era. Right after that, it was called the Bilateral Infrastructure Law Bill, and it appropriated billions of dollars, billions, to all these different agencies. And so that money, as a lot of it, was dedicated to the Klamath Basin because of the issues that we have. You know, our senators worked hard to make sure we had that money in the Upper Basin. So, it's there. It's still available. And we just want to try to figure out a way to work together to find these solutions together to restore ag resiliency and, you know, the river and go out for the money that it's going to take to fix it.
Can you get the entire amount of money that you think you need for this project to see success?
Absolutely.
What kind of period are we talking?
The restoration itself, I really don't have a good handle on because we haven't seen the design. We've got to do the design, but it's going to be years. But the money can be appropriated now for that project. And, you know, it could be, you know, 3 to 5 years of work. It's going to be a lot of work in the Upper Basin and a lot of opportunity economically for the Upper Basin.
And it's a multi-agency, multi-organization project. The Klamath Tribes is involved.
Yes. Yeah, and they've been involved. You know, they're doing work. Brad Parrish is doing work in the Tribs. Shawnee Rich is, the head of the one of the leaders in the Ombudot department. They've been attending our meetings. They're part of the coalition, and we're working with them to make sure that we do this right.
So this design phase will take 2 years?
No, we're going to have it done within 18 months at the longest.
And what will you come out of this with the design phase completed?
We will have a plan. One thing we've never had is, you know, I can go out to landowners and talk about, hey, you mind doing restoration? What does that mean? I don't know. It's like, you got a straight river here. It's been straightened out. You got dikes and whatnot. And, you know, you tear down the dikes, but you still got water just rushing through the property. So, you know, it's just a matter of getting experts in the restoration world to figure out how do you fix that. A lot of the river is over the years, because it's been straightened out and because it's running fast, has basically dug a hole. So the river is entrenched well into the landscape itself. So, you know, that river has to be brought up again. And they do that in the restoration world, where you can cut, where you can bring a river back up to the landscape where you're having a much bigger impact on the absorption rate and whatnot. So you get that water spread out over the landscape and store water in the ground.
And the restoration work itself, you say, would take how long to complete everything?
I would suspect at least 5 years. You know,
that seems kind of short for an entire river like that.
It could be, but it depends on the amount of help that we get. You know, it's just not going to be one entity. You're going to have the Klamath tribes working on it. You're going to have, you know, right now, Rez is one of our subcontractors. Rez is the company that's doing all the restoration for the Klamath Dam removals. So, you know, they're a huge company. So they can come in and bring in the assets needed and maybe more. There's a lot of different companies locally and whatnot that could come in and help out with that project. So it's not just, you know, starting and just doing a piecemeal. We're talking about, you know, if we get all the money, then we're going to get it done as quick as we can.
Again, how much money do you think it might take?
$100 million. Yeah.
Not more?
That's my best guess at this point.
Not that that's a little bit, that's a lot of money. But you said there's like $2 billion out there for the whole nation, right? For these restoration projects across the country.
There's more than that.
More?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bureau of Reclamation has billions. U.S. Fish and Wildlife have billions. Forest Service has billions. So there's a lot of money out there.
Well, I'm glad to see my tax dollars are going to things that I support.
Here you go.
This is kind of a historical time for the country, and it's environmental awareness and restoration work.
It is. I mean, it's a scary time, but it's, you know, a hopeful time too. So, you know, we've all got to work together to figure out how to improve the environment and improve. You know, I can't change global warming. You know, but I can do my little piece. Just like everybody else up here can. I can try to make our world better in the Upper Basin, along with all of us. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do is to, you know, I think we can have an impact on our world up here. There's not been a lot done and not a lot of money dedicated up here because we just have never been organized enough as a community to work together. And that's what it takes. That's why we created the coalition. You know, we got to keep people together, working together to solve this problem.
You were talking to me when we took the tour in your truck that the farmers themselves understand this needs to be done because they're losing out with the lack of water, and they understand things can't continue the way they are, has to change. And when you talk to farmers, you say they're usually on board, right?
Well, nobody's against it that I've ever talked to. Nobody says, no, I'm against restoration. It's just that, you know, they want to get something for it too. You know, it's just, it's impacted their operation. You know, the water, we have not come up with a viable fix for the Schwam and Coptu issues. They're still dying and we're still having those issues. So we've got to work together to solve the complete problem with agriculture and the fisheries. And I think we can work together to have a common plan that will do both. And I don't think we can take one without the other. We got to, you know, you can't just do restoration for the ag to just restore the land and whatnot. You got to do restoration for the fisheries too. It's got to be done together, and we got to have all these things in mind. And that's why the Ombudot team is working with us to make sure that we can do that when we do this, we are doing, to the best of our knowledge, solving the problem.
What will the Sprague look like if it's fully restored to the point that you think it's, what, back to its natural state?
Not quite natural, because there's houses and stuff, and you know, so you're going to have riparian boundaries. Obviously, you have to, because we're not going to flood a house, but you're going to have riparian boundaries. But it's going to be, the green. I visualize the Sprague Valley being green again, most of the summer. I visualize, willows that are along the river itself and is shaded, a meandering river that has slowed down. I visualize a great fisheries where, it's the sport of fishing is, we bring it back. I visualize, being able to see ducks and geese here again in the higher numbers like they used to be. It's not just about the fisheries. It's not just about agriculture. It's about the whole environment. Ducks, geese, deer, elk, all of it. I mean, they all need a healthy ecosystem. And, our ecological goals is to make sure that, we address all these issues.
If somebody's listening and they want to get involved, whether a citizen or somebody in the agriculture business, a farmer, what can they do?
Call me.
Can they get involved, though? I mean, what can they do in the project?
Well, the project right now is mainly just research and whatnot, and that's already, we've already hired out for that. And there's also the tribes. Trout Unlimited and Klamath Watershed Partnership are actually doing restoration jobs, part of which we're funding out of this grant in the tributaries to the Sprague, in the upper part of the Sprague. So, that work's being done, and they've been hiring people to do that, and that's in progress right now. And then we're working on figuring out, what kind of ag resiliency tools can we use to help improve the agricultural lot of the group. So, yeah.
What's your contact information if somebody wants to reach out and talk to you?
We've got a website at ukbac.org is our website and our contact information. And anybody can call me on my cell, 541-326-5101.
What about the Williamson River? They're interconnected, the Sprague and Williamson, right? They feed into each other.
Well, the Sprague feeds into the Williamson. The Williamson, you look on, and it kind of headwaters up into the Klamath Marsh area. That's a whole nother problem that needs to be addressed. And that's a whole nother issue. There's a lot of issues up here. The Sprague isn't the only one. We need to, the Williamson and the marsh need to be looked at and figure out how we can improve that ecosystem. Upper Klamath Lake, same thing. I mean, we got a lot of issues there. You got there's projects going on now to help improve that area. So, we need to just take a good look over the next few years of the whole system up here.
So can this billions of dollars be allocated for the Upper Klamath Lake and Williamson River and the marsh? And
sure. Yeah, we just need the organizational wherewithal to get it done.
Well, so you've got the organizational wherewithal for the Sprague. You need to put together a whole other organizational unit for the others, or
no, we can expand out. We're just getting our feet wet now, and
literally.
Yeah, and we're trying to figure out. We'll always look at next steps. We want to be successful here first. We need to show that this can be done, and then. It can be, we can go to other areas and do the same thing.
Are we at the forefront of this kind of restoration work, or is there other examples of it across the country that have already accomplished what we're trying to do?
I don't think an ag-led organization has been tried before, and so this is relatively new, because we're merging it's so important to look at ag resiliency with an equal eye. And that's what we've done here. We look at it equally with restoration. And if you do that, that's the only way to get landowners on board. So, you know, I think this model could work elsewhere. But like I say, we have to be successful here first.
Exciting times.
I think so. I'm excited about it.
Largest dam removal in the history of the world taking place in our backyard.
That's right. That's almost, it's not going to be much longer. They'll all be down.
I mean, this is really a transformational time for the upper and lower basin.
It is.
For the basin as a whole.
Yep. And now we just need to work together to figure out how could we improve all of our situations ecologically, and financially. We all need to make a living, and agriculture is a big part of the basin in general. And so, you know, how does that all fit together? That's what we want to try to figure out.
Very good. Larry Nicholson of the Sprague River Collaborative Restoration Project joining me today. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Klamath Tribes Podcast. I'm Ken Smith. We'll talk again.